This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Greetings and salutations. It's Todd Weber, another episode of Conversation Comics, exclamation point, with Todd Weber on Place to Be Nation Pop. This is a new feed. It's come from Place to Be Nation. This is a specific pop culture, mostly comics so far, but we're branching out to other avenues, including music, and Glenn Butler's always talking movies, so we have lots of neat podcasts. I just said neat. There's lots of killer podcasts here on the network, including the Hard Traveling Fanboys and Sellers Points and Lucha Undead, which is awesome. So we hope you check out all of our fine shows. But today, I'm going to do things a little bit differently. I'm not going to talk to necessarily a comic expert, but I am going to talk to somebody who is a big-time fan and maybe the biggest fan of the Marvel Cinematic Universe that I can recall. And I'll tell you why I feel that way in just a second. But he's a longtime friend, at least an online one, at least 10 years at this point, I think. And he is the rock and roll machine, Andy Helene. How are you, Andy?
Oh, man, I'm feeling real good after that introduction.
I tried. I didn't build it up as far as Michael Buffer or anything, but I tried a little bit. Cool. So what are you up to these days? What do you do for a living?
Well, I'm a radio DJ at night, and I work on cars during the day, and then I watch movies in between.
Excellent. Excellent. Do you, I seem to recall you had the kick-ass movie watching grandma. Is that, are you still watching movies with her?
We had, even watched the X-Files earlier in the year when that was on TV. And the last movie we saw was, The Jungle Book. That was really good.
Very cool. We'll talk X-Files too, because, you know, I was talking how you were a big fan of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but you may be the biggest fan I've ever met of X-Files, and you blog about them. You've done review shows on them. How long have you been into that show? Were you a fan during its initial incarnation, or are you too young for that?
Well, it's not that I was too young. I guess I was more into pro wrestling than cartoons when it first came out, in the early 90s. So I've only been a fan since 07.
Do you watch X-Files with no lights on?
Yes, yes.
I used to as well. That was actually a thing we did on Friday nights, the gang, my crew of dudes and their girlfriends would go to somebody's random house, and we didn't have DVRs. We had VCRs, but nobody really used them. But we'd always watch at 9 o'clock on Friday night. X-Files was on, and it was a big happening. Pretty cool. I think that doesn't happen anymore where you go to somebody's house to watch a show. Maybe Game of Thrones brings that on. Do you watch that show?
No, I do not.
Yeah. I gotta say that's a pretty all consuming nerd thing. The 10 weeks that Game of Thrones are on are the 10 most happening weeks as far as the attention that the internet and even me and my wife, we give to a show. We're going to watch Game of Thrones, and it becomes kind of our focus for those 10 weeks, which is, it's a pretty good show. It's worth it. And the thing is, you don't want to get spoiled because all these things always happen during each episode. There's some major reveal or major happening, and the worst thing is getting spoiled. So yeah, down the road, check that out. So, cool.
Yeah.
Reason I wanted to talk to you specifically is that we talked years ago, a couple years ago, when I think it was post-Avengers, and you said when the Guardians first trailer had hit, you said, look out, because this is going to be an amazing film. And I remember everybody who was on our blog kind of dissed you as far as that. We said, no, myself included. I'm like, this is going to be the one that Marvel falls flat on their face on. But you called your shot, and you were absolutely right. Guardians of the Galaxy is maybe my favorite of all the Marvel Cinematic movies. What do you think?
Well, I think it's going back and forth with the Captain America Winter Soldier and that one, because I think they both came out the same year, too.
Yeah, that's true, I believe. I think so. Winter Soldier was the spring, and then the Guardians was late summer. And it's neat because every Marvel movie these days almost seems to be an homage to a style, right? And like Ant-Man was kind of a heist caper, right? In your opinion?
I can see that. Yeah, yeah.
I did too. I mean, I thought that. And that was – Ant-Man was another one that I thought would be, okay, it's just going to be all right. And maybe it would have been better had they had the original director. What was his name? I forget.
The guy it was who does the Simon Pegg movie.
That's right. And he did the Scott Pilgrim film. And James Gunn is the guy who does – we're losing all our nerd cred here because I can't remember his name.
Right. Edgar Wright.
That's it. Thank you very, very much. Yeah, apparently he had too strong of a personality to get along with the Marvel higher-ups, or he wanted to do things a certain way, and we may never know all the things, but I'm trying to imagine how Ant-Man could have been maybe a little funnier, and it's tough because that after rewatching, it's been pretty funny for me, and my family likes it too. I have my 6-year-old asking me about Disintegration by The Cure because of that movie. So cool. What'd you think of Civil War?
I really liked it. I'm not really familiar with the story from the comics too well, but I really liked how they went kind of with the Captain America and the Bucky, like their partnership.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I am not the biggest fan of the original comic storyline because I think the writer is the kind of guy that goes these dramatic. He does these dramatic. High moments, and then he doesn't explain them as well as you'd like, or he doesn't fill in the blanks. He leaves that to you. You know, his name's Mark Miller, and we talked about him actually on the last Hard Traveling Fanboys. It wasn't me. It was Greg and Nick, and they were talking about the way that comic was a lot different from the actual movie, where it's the characters, specifically Iron Man, saying, no, we have to document and have all these heroes registered with the government just based on, you know, their liabilities. So, which kind of ended up happening at the end of this film, but it was, they went about it in a very different way. And to me, it seems like the end of Civil War, they left it could be easily undone, which in the comics, I don't think it was. It took a couple years to really go through explore the ramifications of the comic story of Civil War. But in the film, I don't know. I think they could just kind of get off it. They'll be friends again in two movies. So, what's coming up next from Marvel? Thor 3, Ragnarok?
I think it's Doctor Strange.
That's right. Very good. Boy, I'm really... It must be late at night. Benedict Cumberbatch. Have you seen the trailer for that?
Yeah. I saw it attached to something else this spring. It looked really good. Like, it kind of gave me goosebumps. It was that good.
Yeah, I am looking forward to it, too. And that one should be a little bit different, too. That should have its own genre, if you will. Of Marvel film. It's going to be an origin story for Stephen Strange. Have you read any of his comics or do you know any background on the guy?
No, I don't know too much. So that's why I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. It's
really intriguing.
It's going to be very different for this universe. You know, they've tied Scarlet Witch in the comics into magic, even though she's a mutant, you know, you can't really explain her powers, but Doctor Strange is straight up sorcerer and dealing with other dimensional entities and stuff like that. It's going to be pretty crazy. I like the casting. Marvel's been getting a lot of flack because their ancient one is not Asian, and in the comics, he or she is Asian. And so have you seen any of that controversy that Tilda Swinton is supposed to be playing a character that in the comics is Asian, but apparently she's going to be a Celtic goddess of some sort called the Ancient One?
I did see that come up as like a Facebook trending thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure what's going to happen with that. So cool. Right on. So I noticed that you end up working with a lot of rock and roll bands. What's the last thing you did with one of those?
Usually I just get their groceries, so I don't always work closely with them. I work closely with like their tour manager.
Uh-huh. So you're fulfilling a rider kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. Like they give me like a list of their stuff and the station gives me the money and says, okay, here, go out and pick up their, I guess usually their alcohol or their like paper towels or whatever.
Nice. What? Who's the? Well, you probably can't name names. So, what's the weirdest request you had to get?
I thought it was actually like baby wipes. Like I was like, why would this band want baby wipes? And so when I got back, I asked them, and they said that when they're on stage, and they're like super sweaty, they don't have time to shower, so they'll just kind of like wipe off some sweat. and then I guess sign autographs.
Okay. Okay, cool. So it's just for like rapid sanitation.
I guess, yeah. Like it made sense. I mean,
yeah,
I mean,
that's so good. I mean, I can imagine some nefarious uses. I'm sure you can too. Nice. Wow. Cool. So have you ever had to work with Tesla? Who, I know we've had this conversation a little bit online. Tesla's my kind of local hard rock band that tours, and they're a friend of a friend. The lead guitar player for Tesla, Frank Cannon, is a friend of my next door work neighbor, who they were in a band together for many years.
Oh, yes, right. You did tell me about that. Yeah. I only got to meet them like briefly because they played this motorcycle rally in Peoria, and it was like two summers ago. And we just got to go backstage and meet them real quick, and that was it. But it was still cool.
Right on. How far is Peoria from Chicago?
It's 2.5 hours south.
I've always imagined your life is kind of like Wayne's World. Is that the case? You know, they were in Aurora, and hockey is big, and rock and roll is still pretty big, but it's still kind of a small town. But if you really wanted to go, you can go to Chicago and the big city, and you get lost. Is that kind of the case, or not even close?
Well, if my life was Wayne's World, I would be like the guy who had the long hair that was like doing the countdown with the camera and like messed it up. That would be me.
Nice. That would be your Wayne's World character. I think they used to call me Phil. You know, the gang from my old crew would call me Phil because one time we all went out and I threw up in the car. And so they would say, Phil's partied out, dude. They never let me live it down. I didn't actually give their car a smog check, though. Although that was the same character.
I think the guy that I'm thinking of in Wayne's World, I don't know his name, but I think he went on to be like real famous, though. And like
one of the guys was Dom DeLuise's son, I think, from 21 Jump Street.
Oh yeah, the guy I'm thinking of, he was in I think Oz.
Okay. Wow, that's on my Oz is a show that's on my blind spots. You know, I've not watched a lot of that show. I don't think it's even on the HBO Go app. No, maybe it is, but have you seen Oz?
I've seen a few episodes just because, like, there was a guys who were in Law and Order when that.
Okay.
So.
How about The Wire? Is that up your wheelhouse?
No, but all the guys on the blog, the old Blog of Doom guys.
Yeah.
Like, when I was watching some detective shows like Law and Order, like, they're like, oh, man, you have to watch The Wire. But I was so, I think I was getting into X-Files then, so it was hard to, like, pick and choose.
Right on. Yeah, I listened to the Goodfellas Minute podcast, and so Goodfellas is probably my favorite movie, and they were going through just the cast of Goodfellas, and all of them have been on Law & Order, and what's the other one? I guess it's just Law & Order, the different iterations of those, Special Crimes Unit and all those.
Oh, yeah, the SVU, yeah.
It's funny, because as a character actor, you're kind of typecast a lot, so both in The Wire, where you're a Baltimore drug lord, or in Goodfellas, where you're a mobster, and that's what happens on Law and Order. You have those kind of cases, or at least those kind of alibis or character witnesses that they have to come in and do a quick interview with. Oh, it's that guy. You know, I don't think I'm distinctive enough to be a character actor. My brother is actually a really good actor. He does regional things, and he was in the movie Primal Fear. Have you seen that film with Ed Norton?
Yeah, is that the one where it's like, it had Richard Gere in it too?
Yes, yeah, he's the lawyer with Laura Linney, and we've got this... but you've had a little church sex scandal going on, and Ed Norton is the victim in that. And anyway, my brother was one of the characters that he actually tried out for that role, but he didn't get that, but he was still in the film, which is cool. And he was on a movie called Big Man on Campus with Tom Everett Scott from That Thing You Do. You know, he just gets these kind of random roles. He doesn't have a SAG card or anything, but still has a pretty cool life. He does. He's an accountant, but he still gets these movie roles, which is cool.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah. So, right on. So, we were going to talk some more Marvel talk, and talking about Edward Norton there makes me think about the Incredible Hulk, the second one, not the Ang Lee masterpiece that everybody hate watches with the dogs and who is the dad? Was it Nick Nolte, I believe, in that movie? But the Incredible Hulk with Ed Norton, what do you think? Is that on the top half of the Marvel Cinematic films, or would you put it on the lower side?
I would say that's like maybe my least favorite one.
Yeah, probably me too. What about it? Didn't you like?
I really didn't like Liv Tyler. I thought that was like miscast. I don't know. She just kind of annoyed me.
Yeah, and she was Betsy Ross. Betty Ross. Yeah, I don't know. In the comics, I always kind of thought she was a little bit more sympathetic and Liv Tyler's always come off as an airhead to me, even in that thing with You Do that she's pretty good in. We just talked about that movie. But also she's on The Leftovers, which is an HBO show, and she's pretty good in that show. So I think maybe she's come up quite a bit. Liv Tyler's got an interesting life because she wasn't really close with her dad as she was growing up, I don't believe. Her mom's a lady named Bebe Buell, who was kind of a groupie to a lot of the rock stars. Like, she was
not
married.
Bebe Besh?
Not Bebe Besh. No, Bebe Buell. Yeah, she's one of the famous Bebes that I like to talk about. But yeah, Liv Tyler's mom, she was married to Elvis Costello for a while.
So, oh, wow.
I know. I imagine that life where your dad's a rock star and your stepdad is Elvis Costello. And just, yeah, it's got to be weird. But rich people, you know. Cool. What else on the Marvel films? Do you like any of the other ones or dislike any of the other ones? Or is that kind of the Cody line on that? Is that that where the mediocrity or the bad films begin?
Actually, now that you kind of mentioned that Hulk movie, I kind of thought that the Stan Lee cameo was one of the better ones because where he drank the soda with the...
Yes, right at the beginning too, I think, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I think it was early on.
Yeah. I know there's a supercut of all the Stan Lee cameos. That would be pretty good. He's actually been in all the X-Men ones, too. X-Men films, I believe. Even though there's no connection in the regular universe, there is a Stan Lee. You know, he's like, he teleports between the X-Men universes and the Marvel Cinematic films. He goes back and forth. So, yeah, it'd be pretty interesting to see how they justify that. And like, you know, he's not the same guy, but he is. But he created them all, and he's like, he's not going to be around for that much longer, I don't think. Dude's old. So it's kind of nice that they throw him a bone every single movie. I hope, was he in Civil War? I'm trying to think as my wife opens the window.
I was even trying to think, like, I just saw X-Men, and I can't even remember what he was in there.
He's been in, had a couple different ones. He was mowing the lawn in one of them. And I'm trying to think, in the original one, he was like a Hugh Hefner kind of character, I believe. I have to go back and see. I just think it's neat that they let him be in all of those because he created all of them, too. He gets all the credit, but he co-created almost all of these characters with other people who don't get all the acclaim. You know, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby created most of these characters, and Steve Ditko created a lot of them, too. Or, you know, he worked on Doctor Strange and Spider-Man, obviously, so... I would love to think that someday those names will be just as well known as Stan Lee, but it's doubtful. It's not going to happen. Stan Lee is a pretty good media company working for him and gets his name out, but apparently he's not going to be traveling to too many of the comics conventions anymore. Have you ever been to any cons in Chicago?
Yeah, I actually have been to a couple. I was hoping it kind of would have came up in our discussion, but the first one I went to, it was 2012, and I actually was invited by Kyle. Another one of our buddies.
Yeah, that guy. I need to get him on. He's a great artist.
Yeah.
Nice. What do you recall anything? Did you go to any panels, or was it just kind of general walking around the con and checking stuff out?
It was a C2E2.
That's what it is. That's right. C2E2.
Spring. And I just kind of wanted to go to, like, meet a couple different celebrities, but then it ended up being actually cooler because I really liked the first Captain America movie, and there was a huge, like, display of all these props and costumes, and I guess they were going to be auctioned off.
Wow, that's huge. That's big time.
It was cool. I tried to take as many pictures as I could, and then they had, like, a prosthetic, like, the Red Skull, like, mask, and they had some guns, and I think there was even a motorcycle. And what was cool later on was I was meeting up with Kyle and some of his buddies who also are, like, comic artists and, like, stuff like that. Well, we were riding up in an elevator up to one of the guy's hotel rooms, and there was a guy in the elevator who had one of the shields, and he was from the prop auction, and he had the shield, like the all silver one from, I guess, when they were in, like,
right,
the lab and they were testing it out.
Uh-huh, the prototype one. Yeah, very cool. Talking about vibranium for the first time. Right on. Were there any of the stars in the movie there?
I don't think so, but I think they ended up having, like, the cast of Thor, or at least... Hemsworth, he was there the next year, I think.
Okay, cool. Who's the most famous person you've seen at one of those cons?
Well, I actually did see Stan Lee. I didn't actually meet him, but I was riding down a escalator at another one in Louisville, and I just happened to be, like, trying to go back and forth because they had, like, the artists and the actors on one level, and then they had, like, their where you buy the merchandise on the bottom.
Uh-huh.
And I found this back way, like, this escalator. And like Stan Lee was in front of me, and I was like, oh my God, Stan Lee's like on the level in front of me, and he's writing down. I didn't want to say anything because I thought, oh shit, I might kill him if I like, hey Stan, and he turns around, and I'm like, oh shit.
So he's awfully slight. That's got to be a toupee, right?
I don't know, but he was so like frail. I even thought if I sneezed or something or breathed, that might knock him down too.
Yeah. Well, he also had my favorite part of Mallrats, if you've seen that. I'm sure you have.
Yeah.
I wonder what he thought. He must like Kevin Smith because they did a couple things together. So Kevin Smith, I think, is pretty gets a bad rap for some things. But when it comes down to it, he has a pretty good work ethic. I went on a tangent from Stan Lee to Kevin Smith. But yeah, Mallrats is one of those movies that has parts of it I love and parts that I hate. Like at the stink palm, it's so juvenile, but yet it's so great because Michael Rooker is so fantastic selling that. Have you ever seen him at a con, Michael Rooker?
Oh, I didn't actually pay to meet him either, but I saw him in one of the lobby areas. Uh-huh. I was coming back to my hotel room, and there was like a little bar, I guess, in the like off to the side of something, like down the hallway. And there was a crowd of people who were standing around. I was like, what the heck's going on? And I guess it was Michael Rooker, and they were crowding around him. And he was taking selfies with different girls. And I heard him say, oh, you're a hussy.
Who uses that? Who says that? That's what Michael Rooker does. That's cool. Right on. Speaking of Michael Rooker, let's get back to Guardians, which is probably the very top. I think Guardians is still my favorite just because my expectations were so low. And it was had such a unique vision, James Gunn, and not the android named the Vision, but I mean the vision of the filmmaker and the actual film with the 70s music and such a funny script and the quirky execution of all these characters. And yet it still had the drama, it still had Thanos, and still had the kind of it had Glenn Close of all things in the Marvel Universe, John C. Reilly, just a off-the-wall casting things. So what are some of the things you really like about Guardians?
Well, as you said, I really liked the music, and I really liked Batista in there. I thought he was probably like the I always kind of underrated him as like a wrestler and an actor, but he kind of blew me away in that movie. So.
Yeah, me too. I again had the lowest of expectations, and even if you think objectively, he was great. He was fantastic as that character. I have a connection to that role, to Drax, not him in the comics or anything, because in the comics he's been very different until the Guardians. They've kind of tweaked him in the actual Guardians comic books. Have you read any of those before?
I read a Rocket Raccoon, like a four-part thing, and that's about all I've read. It was like...
Was it older or newer?
It was from the 90s. I think it was Tales from Half-World.
Okay, yeah, that's relatively... That's a little bit older. That's pre-Guardians, but that's cool that they reused that. I remember in the 80s there was a Mike Mignola Rocket Raccoon series, and Mike Mignola created Hellboy, so it had a very distinct kind of dark visual look, but it was still kind of comic booky as far as, you know, goofy. It's an anthropomorphic raccoon. What are you going to do? But the character itself is still, you know, feisty and funny, and I think that character comes off so much better than a CGI character really should. You know, you forget that it's an actual green screen. They really sell that, and Brad Cooper's voice acting is really good in the actual Rocket performance too. So yeah, I think Guardians still is my favorite. It's just such a different cat. It's such a different film that you have Chris Pratt doing a totally. Chris Pratt being himself, you know, but it just works for Star-Lord, for Peter Quill. Yeah. What do you think about the second Avengers film, which came out after Guardians?
I really like that in the theater. I haven't watched it since, but I kind of feel like...
Ultron, right. We're talking Age of Ultron.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Like, I guess I need to watch it again because I liked it, but at the time, I think I've kind of cooled on it a little bit.
Yeah, I was so excited to see it. You know, I had all this hype and build up, and James Spader's a really good villain. But if you go to think about it, the film itself, with the exception of introducing maybe Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, it doesn't have a whole lot of lasting memories to me. I don't think about, oh, there's that iconic scene like we did in the first Avengers, you know, you had the when they're getting together to battle New York, and they had it in the trailer, but you know, you did the circular shot of all of them. That lasts. Avengers has all the stuff with Thor, Hulk and Loki, or the compared to the second. I think the second one just doesn't. It doesn't seem to be as well remembered among the hardcore fans, and that's kind of a bummer. It also led to Joss Whedon departing the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Joss Whedon, did he ever work on X-Files at all?
No, he was doing Buffy at the time.
Yeah, just Buffy. Okay. Yeah, he's created the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but his brother, I believe, works on that too. Do you have any favorite Joss Whedon shows, properties besides the Avengers?
With Joss, I've watched Buffy and Angel, and I've watched was Firefly, but I hadn't watched the other one where it was like a Elijah Dushku, where she's like
Dollhouse.
Yeah.
Yeah, tried. I think I watched the pilot, and then like I have so many other shows to watch right now. That's the thing right now. There's so many things you can get into and binge. Are you a Netflix guy?
I am now. Like, I wasn't for a while, but I've been watching Friends, and I've been watching Frasier on there, so.
Right on. Yeah, I think Parks and Rec is my go-to right now. Parks and Rec and 30 Rock.
I think the thing with that Dollhouse was I wanted to get into it, but then I think Terminator was on at the same time, uh-huh. And they both kind of end up getting canceled, so it's kind of a thing where it's kind of been on the back burner for a long time.
Yeah, I never checked out that Terminator with Lena Headey was the actress. Yes. Sarah Connor Chronicles, is that the one?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's awesome. She's great in 300 and Game of Thrones. There's that show again. But, yeah, I never got around to it. I was kind of burnt out on Terminator after the third one, I think. It took a while for me. And I don't know what they're going to do with that franchise because they had Salvation, which didn't do so well with Christian Bale, right? Did you see that one?
Yeah, I saw it and I didn't like it that much, but I think the show came out about the same time as that movie.
Okay. I wonder how close a connection to them they have. And then they had the new Terminator Genesis, which I always will remember at least the timing of it because it was at my first WrestleMania that Triple H had his Terminator entrance. So I know, but I saw that live and it was something. I don't know what it was, but it was something. Actually, I liked Sting's Kabuki entrance a little bit more than that. That was cooler for me.
Yeah, that was cool too.
Yeah, nice. Have you ever been to a WrestleMania?
No, I haven't.
I'm trying to think, when was the last time they were in Chicago? Was that 22?
Yeah.
With CM Punk in the gangster, the gangster suit with Cena. Cool. Who's your favorite wrestler these days?
I haven't really watched really anything current actually since WrestleMania. I've been watching some. 90s WCW.
Excellent.
That's about it. So I'd buy some DDP.
DDP is probably, I mean, as a human being, he may be my favorite person in the world right now. Just because what he's doing, saving the lives of these wrestlers who have gone bad. And all these horror stories of wrestlers that bad things happen to. And who we all thought Scott Hall would become a statistic and Jake the Snake too. And there it is. There's the tie into Netflix. Because the resurrection of Jake the Snake Roberts is on Netflix right now, so that's one to watch.
Yeah, I need to watch that. And I saw that Justin he posted that he was watching tonight.
Yeah, Justin has a connection. He met DDP and did the DDP yoga seminars, so that's pretty cool. Yeah. I tried DDP yoga and it kicked my butt literally. I really need to get back in shape and it's on my back burner. I bought the whole Max Pack too. But are you a yoga guy? What do you do to stay fit?
I don't know. I keep trying to go to the gym, but sometimes I don't always get there because I work like two jobs. Yeah. So I drink a lot of soda, which is bad.
Yeah, but you seem like a pretty skinny guy, though. Do you just have a high metabolism?
I don't know. I'm skinny, but I got like a beer gut.
Nice. Ah, very cool. Do you drink a lot of beer? Or is that just because of soda?
It might be soda and beer.
Okay. Right on. Right on. Yeah, if you listen, you want to hear what beer can do to you, listen to the last episode of Seller's Points, where we all challenged each other to drink a lot before the podcast recording. And I had 7, and I think the other guys only had 2 or 3. And so as the podcast progressed, I just got slower and slower and louder and louder. And you think I interrupt a lot now, you should hear me when I'm drunk. It's pretty bad. So right on. Well, cool. Well, we're going to head up on a break here with talking with Andy. And then when we get back, we're going to talk a little bit more specifically about comic books and comic memories and just kind of hang out and enjoy each other's conversation here on Conversation Comics. So we'll be right back after this.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and placetobenation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Friscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network. That's the PWO PTBN Podcast Network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We've got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
What's up? We're continuing this conversation, comics and other things, with Andy Helene. We're talking a little bit of rock and roll. We're talking a little bit of X-Files. We're talking about comics conventions and, most importantly, or at least most predominantly, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But we, Andy and I, have a long history, about 10 years now. What do you think? Is that about that? About right?
Oh, yeah, and I even bought you a gift, too, one time.
That's right, you did. Andy bought me, and it's still on YouTube, if I recall correctly. Andy bought me the Miami Vice soundtrack because one time he threw up a random post, and I said, dude, eighth grade, Miami Vice was my life. I had the tape. I had that soundtrack on cassette, and I wore it out, and Andy sent it to me. And so I think you drew me in the Blog of Doom Christmas pool or Secret Santa, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Nice. That's pretty cool. I got, what's his name? His name, he lives in Kentucky, and I forget his name. He's the guy that you always fought with.
Joe?
No, let's see. It's a guy you used to make fun of his name. Like he was, Weinhardt. Reinhardt. There it is.
Yeah.
I got him, and I got him some swag for the wrestling company down there. I forget they're called. It's not NWA, but it's something down there. So I know he had gone to those shows. That was pretty fun. So we should talk about the Blog of Doom so people know what we're talking about. How did you get into pro wrestling?
Would have been like 92, 93. So not really a popular time for, I guess, fans because they were kind of getting out of it then. But I was getting into it then.
For reference, how old were you back then?
I was 8.
8 years old. Cool. That's about the time I got into. I got into stuff in the early 80s, and AWA was the only thing we had on TV. So did you guys have cable, or did you just find it on TV once, or?
It was like a neighbor, I think. He was a couple years older, and he watched it. So I think I was wanting to be cool like him. And I ended up watching it right when, like, Monday Night Raw started.
So I'm going to guess you were a big fan of Shawn Michaels growing up.
No.
No.
And Macho Man.
Bret Hart. That's true. I forget that Bret was like this, the ultimate good guy. And Macho Man, too. He was, that was post, post Sherry leaving him and his reuniting with Elizabeth. Okay, cool. I guess that makes sense. I guess, I think 93 to 95 are the Shawn Michaels years, but he really didn't hit that apex till 96, right?
Yeah, probably. We had a good, like, intercontinental run, didn't he? Against Jeff Jarrett and that.
Who was your favorite? How'd you get into WCW?
It was, I ended up seeing it. I think the earliest I remember seeing WCW was Honky Tonk Man was there, and I was like, and I didn't like it. So I didn't come back for another, like, year or so until the NWO started and Hall and Nash went over.
Yeah, and that's when I got into WCW again, but I had started in the 80s because I thought Ric Flair was just awesome. I don't know why I was attracted to the ideal of being the cool bad guy, but Ric Flair was. Even though he was a chicken shit heel at times, he still talked. His promos were so good. And talking late 80s, you know, specifically the Steamboat feud that everybody can go back and watch on the WWE Network if you subscribe, and you everybody should because it's only $9.99. But, yeah, I – and then I kind of lost it. I didn't watch anything after maybe – I think my dark period started right after WrestleMania 6. And then I didn't watch for years until the NWO brought me back in.
Wow. So that's kind of like you only watched for like a year or two?
No. I was a Federation era guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched like from 82 with like – the AWA, and then I got into WCCW in Texas because it was on ESPN all the time, and then eventually got into the WWF. What do you call it? The shows on Saturdays, like Superstars, and they're syndicated shows. And then a special event would be when Saturday Night's Main Event was on because you'd see the real shows. I never would get to see pay-per-view events until they were after the fact on wrestling tapes. You know, you'd get the VCR. VHS tapes and watch like WrestleMania 2. I got in trouble once. That's a funny story. I got in trouble for I couldn't wait to see WrestleMania 2, and my dad got it as a special trip on our visit to my step grandma. Everybody should have a step grandma. If you have a kick ass stepmom like I have, you should have a step grandma. Anyway, we went down to San Jose, and I put in the tape when I wasn't supposed to. I didn't have TV privileges. I hadn't asked, and so they got the whole tape for me. And then took it away. I was so upset. So that's a random WrestleMania 2 memory. WrestleMania 2, one of the main events was at Chicago, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Very first. Let's see. What was the best part of that? Was it the Battle Royal or was that the tag team match?
I'd probably go with the tag team.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. Dream Team and Bulldogs, correct?
Yeah, and then Ozzy Osbourne.
That's right. Oh, Ozzy with the Bulldogs. That's fantastic. Have you seen Ozzy live?
I saw the Black Sabbath tour 3 years ago up in Chicago.
Were you working it?
No, but I got free tickets from the radio station, and it was like my boss. He wasn't able to go, and he sent me some texts like a couple days before and said, hey, you can have these Black Sabbath tickets if you text me back 15 Sabbath songs. And I was like... he probably didn't even know 15 Sabbath songs, so I probably could have made up some stuff, but that was... It was like the fastest I'd ever sent a text in my life. I rattled off like 15 or 16 songs. I even threw in some of the Dio ones in there.
Very cool. Yeah, I like Dio. Black Sabbath is underrated. I'm a big Dio fan, actually, because in the early days of MTV, he always had the craziest videos. Dio's videos were nuts. Yeah. Black Sabbath, do you have a favorite Black Sabbath song? Can you narrow it down to just one?
Well, I don't know. Heaven and Hell just came to my mind, so I'm going to go with that.
excellent. I think Sweet Leaf, just because of the riff. The riff is fun. Sweet Leaf and NIB are both cool. But, I mean, Paranoid is probably the best song, or Iron Man is probably the best song if you ask general public. But, yeah, I like it a little bit deeper. Ozzy. How is Ozzy still alive?
I don't know. He's probably preserved like Keith Richards.
Yeah,
like,
Ozzy, Keith Richards, and they're going to live forever.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, you saw Alice Cooper not too long ago, or a couple years ago.
I've seen him a couple times over the last couple of years. Yeah, I saw him front row, actually. Was the most recent.
Did you ever drive up to Milwaukee to see him?
No, but our friend from Milwaukee area, I saw him last year at the Foo Fighters show.
That's pretty cool. Do we have two friends up there or just one friend up there?
Actually, there's two. He's another guy, and I'm going to be seeing him, I think, next month.
Right on. Tell him hi. He's a big Pearl Jam guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he and I talk about Pearl Jam, and my band covered a Pearl Jam song, and I sent it to him, and he thought it was pretty good. I think he was actually pleasantly surprised. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So anyway, we were talking about getting into wrestling in the mid-90s and then eventually NWO. How did you get on the internet about wrestling? How did you get into the online wrestling community?
Through probably like most people, Scott Keith, like around 05, I was reading his reviews and then stumbled onto this, blog of Doom.
Okay. So 95 or so, or no, 05, a little bit later.
Well, I had, I think my parents had AOL like in 07. So I kind of like looked at the WWF like .com thing, but I never joined any communities or anything till 05.
Welcome to WWF Online. Yeah, I remember that pretty well. Lots of sunny all the time. Sunny Ooh. Pictures. Good times. Oh, Sunny. Huh, I wonder what Sunny's up to these days.
Probably charging people to watch her videos.
Yeah. Don't Google that if you're not in a safe place right now, or.
What's that? Not safe for work.
Safe for work. NSFW. So specifically, I got into, I guess I just started Googling, you know, the secrets of pro wrestling, because that was always what fascinated me, you know, that so many people just didn't know it was work still, and yet it was so obvious. And when did you figure out that it was fake, or at least predetermined?
I can't really remember. But I think it was like maybe 97 or something, you know, when Vince McMahon was becoming the McMahon character. Uh-huh. And he was must have been on some trial or something. And I was like, OK, so he's Vince McMahon, the commentator, but he's Vince McMahon, the guy. And then I don't know. It seemed kind of weird. And then my buddies was like. Yeah, well, they're all just, like, scripting it and stuff, and he's in charge of it, so.
Anyway, I think everybody has that epiphany that, at least at a certain age, that, wait a second, this isn't really on the up and up, and boy, if it was, how come it's so dramatic every time? How does it work? How does nobody just get beat up? Or, yeah,
like,
you know?
It should have been that Pillman gun thing, too, kind of was what tipped me off, because I was like, what? Wouldn't they call the cops and all that stuff? And there was no cops. It was just Austin beating up people and throwing them in like an inflatable pool.
Or the outsiders running the Steiners off the road.
Yeah, I actually just watched that, and I was actually kind of almost horrified by that because I was in a car wreck, and it seemed legit, like it was actually like a real car wreck.
Right.
But I guess it was some little trick editing in there, but man, I don't know.
It got everybody back into wrestling. It really did, at least as far as my friends. And some of them stuck with it. Some of them were just there for the boom period, for the NWO and then the Austin versus McMahon feud, the Attitude Era. But I got into, I guess I started researching online, and I got into a place called RSPW. Not RSPWFAQ.com, but RSPW, which is a news group. And you know, people all kind of belong to this community. It was kind of like a blog where you put into stuff. And Scott was the moderator and the net cop, as he called it. But he always put up these great reviews of the shows. And he had the actual FAQ he was the proprietor of. He maintained that. And so Like, that answers every question you could want to know, you know, whether there were two Ultimate Warriors or whatever, all those things. I love the actual FAQ document back in the day. Because if there was a question about things, it was pretty much answered on there. Do you have any favorite? What do you like about wrestling still? I mean, what do you go back? Is it just you'll never give up? Is it just always going to be entertaining to you? It's your jam? Or what specifically makes you still into wrestling? Maybe not the current product so much, but classic wrestling. What about it was talking to you?
I think it's just like the goofiness of it, because I started thinking, I'm like, some people are like, oh man, this wrestling's bad. This stuff's bad. I'm like, I think it's kind of all bad, but that's what kind of makes it good. Kind of like bad movies. So That's maybe why I watch it, because I like bad movies.
Yeah. Right on. So bad movies like the 90s Marvel movies, stuff like that?
Kind of bad movies like, I don't know, like the cheesy action stuff, kind of like some of those James Bond movies where it's just somebody like falling to their death and you hear like, ah!
Yeah, especially the Roger Moore 70s James Bond movies. Those are not very good.
Yeah, or like sharks. We'll see. I like the bad guys with the sharks.
Right on. Sharks with laser beams on their heads.
With freaking lasers.
Freaking lasers. I was Dr. Evil once for Halloween. I wish I had those pictures because it was pretty good. I had the little mini-me doll, too. Around. But that was one of the last times I was clean shaven. Usually, I didn't shave my head. I had a bald wig, but generally I have a goatee or a beard all the time. And I actually was skinny enough and felt good enough to shave, but my lips always look weird when I shave it. So, yeah, that was a long time ago. That was probably 1999. Goodness gracious. So, or 98, sorry. Yeah, I know. So you started reading Scott Keith and his blog, and so that was on LiveJournal, was it not?
Yeah.
Was MySpace around at that point too, or just LiveJournal? Or
I don't think MySpace was, but I think it was maybe one of those websites like 411 Mania or something had his reviews, and I think that's how I went to the blog, was because he had his reviews on there of like all the shows, like what was it, the Smark?
Right. That's right.
Smart grants.
Yeah.
So
and eventually he got his own domain. He started moving away from LiveJournal, but not everybody wanted to move with him to follow along. So what happened then on the Blog of Doom?
Well, I was recently talking to another guy, Tim Capel, about this, and like there was a guy who was on LiveJournal whose little handle username was Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise. Did we ever find out who he really was? Are we real life friends with Tom Cruise at all?
See, that's what I was wondering. And I was wondering that. I was talking to Tim. I'm like, did we ever find out who the Tom Cruise guy was? Was it just a random guy, or was it, you know, somebody else? But I think it was Labor Day weekend or something. He had something called the Tomathon, where he was gonna like make posts like for the whole weekend or something, and I actually followed along with a lot of those, and then all these other guys were falling in
on Scott's blog, or was it on his own blog?
It was on his blog, I think, at the time, and then because he left the blog, and then that's when the Tom Cruise guy, he made his own, and instead of RSPWFAQ, it was FA2.
FA2, that's right.
So, yeah, it broke off, and everybody, we all had pictures of NWO guys, and they were, like, tagged with, like, the CWO, Cruise World Order. So everybody's taking that and using, like, MS Paint or something.
Fantastic. And that's honestly where I met all of you guys. That's where I think there's a place to be nation, because there was a Blog of Doom, and ultimately because there was a Tom Cruise. There was a guy whose gimmick was to be Tom Cruise on LiveJournal. He actually had the moniker Tom Cruise. but I guess it's really because of Scott Keith. Scott Keith is the guy we got to trace it back to, that we're all friends, and that there's a Place to Be Nation website and podcast network and all this stuff all the way back to Scott. So that's pretty cool. And real world friendships. Like, you've met people from the blog and hung out with them, right?
Yeah, and I guess now with that WrestleMania, like, I noticed through a Place to Be, it seemed like there was like, what, 30 or 40 guys hanging out for WrestleMania this year?
Yeah, there was. I got to meet Nick Duke, who was on, in the later days of the Blog of Doom. He was on there, and Also got to meet Justin, who is Bigelow 34, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had all these names on LiveJournal for our blogs, but I every once in a while I just open up my link to Overcommitter, who was me, Overcommitter's blog, and there's nothing to my friend's page. There's nothing to list. There's hasn't been a post in a couple of years on there. But we tried to keep it going. You especially tried to keep it going. It was neat. I mean, it was a fun blog, but I think we can replicate almost all the experiences now in the various chat rooms and on the Place to Be Nation chats page and stuff like that. But I mean, it was tough because some people never switched over.
It's weird how like some of my like funnest like, or maybe fond memories are all online, but they were all you guys online. So I don't know. It just seems like we've been friends for so long.
It's hard to find people in the real world that have our specific mixes of interest, specifically wrestling. I mean, I know people who like wrestling in the real world, or at least out here, and they're either really busy with stuff, and they're cool. I know some cool guys, but they're too busy to really talk about wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, and somehow we're not. We can still talk about it, or we have enough. We have it where it works in this way to share our likes and dislikes and just become friends. And over the course of time, you know, we've had fallings out. All of us have in this group, but I think life's too short. We all kind of have, we're all simpatico. What I like is that we all have kind of things we're good at and things we'd like to write about. And Place to Be Nation's given us a place to do that. At least for me, I got to write about comics and brought over Greg and Nick. And then they invited Tim over and it's like, boom, that's like a crew of people who are always going to be there for you to talk about stuff like that. And I'm getting all sentimental. This is pretty cool. Cool. So let's talk rock and roll a little bit more because you have a unique perspective on rock and roll. I'm a musician for life, but that's what I do. I'm in a couple bands, but I make my money teaching guitar. But you're a DJ and you end up working with these bands and these artists. So I already asked you what the weirdest thing you had to track down, which was Baby Wipes. But who would you say is the most famous musician you got to talk to in person?
Well, I didn't get to talk to him, but Slash and his band was probably like the biggest ones that I've
right.
The opportunity to work with. But maybe Five Finger Death Punch would be the ones that I've talked to that were probably the most successful. I don't know if you've ever listened to them or not.
I have taught some of their covers. They do a cover version of something. I'm off the top of my head. What's their well-known cover or fairly well-known cover?
Probably Bad Company.
Yeah, that's it. That's how I know that name. Yeah, I've taught their cover of Bad Company, which is cool. Bad Company, there's a wrestling tie-in, right? You know the significance of Bad Company in the wrestling world?
Was that the guys who were in the Orient Express?
It's the Orient Express on when they were with AWA. And their manager was?
The manager for the Orient Express or the manager
no,
for?
Not Mr. Fuji, but for AWA, for Bad Company.
Would it be the guy that managed all the guys in?
Oh, Sheik Adnanol Casey? Not that guy. I'm trying to think some of the other AWA guys. But Bad Company and AWA were managed by Diamond Dallas Page.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He was really a slime ball back then. Like, really douchey as far as his character, his online character. And he slowly, not online, I'm sorry, his on in-ring character. And he kind of evolved, you know. You watch DDP, when we watched him, and he was the biggest pure face in WCW for a while, right?
Yeah. I watched the Sting DVD, and it's weird. It was like the Sting best of, but yet it's all TV matches, and they have a squash where Sting beat DDP in like 20 seconds.
Huh. Was it Crow Sting?
No, it was 92, I think.
Okay.
So it's kind of weird they put that on the best of Sting for the recent DVD, but it was kind of cool, I guess.
I guess so. Yeah, I remember he had the Battle Bowl ring and he had a feud with Hacksaw Duggan over it. And then eventually
he
found a hook. Maybe it's because he was good friends with Bischoff, but he found a hook that he was allowed to stand up a little bit to the NWO, and he got him really over. He got him over, like, legendarily so. And he ended up being a pretty good worker, I remember, too. So, Well, we're talking a lot more wrestling than we are comics and pop culture stuff, but that's okay because that's the foundation of our friendship. That's how I even know you. Let's talk a little bit more about Marvel Cinematic Universe. We talked about the Captain America films and how you got to see the props from the original Captain America. That movie's still so good. I like Hugo Weaving as Red Skull. And I don't remember Bucky all that much in the movie, but is it actually, you can answer this. Is Bucky still, is Sebastian Stan, did he play Bucky in the first one too?
Yeah, he's been in all three.
That's pretty good casting if, you know, he was able to go from a kind of a basic role in the first one. I mean, I guess it's, you believe the friendship between he and Cap. But Winter Soldier is a badass. He really is. I really like, he's going to be in a lot of these films. He signed a big contract with Marvel. So, okay, I guess I didn't recall that he actually did play Bucky Barnes in the first one, although I could just watch it and see. Usually when I watch the first Captain America, I'm a little busy watching Haley Atwell because that's, to me, the I don't want to be sexist, but I guess I'm going to be, what's wrong with being sexy, right? Like they say in Spinal Tap. Agent Carter in that movie is fantastic. That's like, dream girl. So, yeah, anyway, have you seen, well, of course you've seen Winter Soldier, the movie. What do you like about that film that stands out as one of the top two or three in the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Why I'd say I like it is because I liked the Captain America movies because they seemed like they were more than just superhero movies. Like the first one, where it spent a lot of time back in the 40s, or actually most of the movie in the 40s, it was like, it felt like Indiana Jones and James Bond. So it was more of like an adventure movie than like a comic book movie.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. It wasn't much of a war movie, but it happened with the war in the background. But yeah, it had that rollicking kind of adventure. Always, there were a couple of slow moments, but they really nailed the feel of that time too. I love the USO stuff that he does. That's so funny to go back and watch with the big triangular shield, you know?
Yeah. I liked how, I knew they wouldn't kind of use the actual Captain America outfit that's so like, he's using the comic books for so long, but I liked how they kind of tied it in. At least it was kind of the funny moment where, yeah, like that was his costume when he was.
It really was. It was his costume for years and years. They changed it with more of a chainmail kind of thing, but you look at it and watch it like, oh yeah, that's kind of ridiculous. And so they made it, turned it into more of a military uniform with the helmet and everything. And that's kind of from, the Ultimates comic book. I don't know if you've read those series, the Ultimates 1 and Ultimates 2. It's kind of a variation on that, the actual costume they use. Underrated part of the first Captain America movie is Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah.
I mean, he's such a good actor. He's in everything. And I almost forgot that he was in it because he was only in that first movie. But he gave it kind of that credibility. Yeah, that movie holds up pretty well. I need to go back and watch Winter Soldier. I haven't seen that one in again. You've read the Winter Soldier comic book, though, too, by Ed Brubaker. And what do you like about that?
I liked how I'm not a huge comic book guy. I'm familiar with stuff, but I liked how I knew enough of the backstory where some of the other characters, it kind of made sense to me. Like how there's Nomad, and then they like briefly, like in the flashbacks, I show the Invaders and two of them from my uncle's comic book collection. And I've kind of went through some of his stuff when I was a kid. And I think he had one or two issues of Invaders with, like, the Human Torch and the Submariner.
Yeah, and Toro, little torch, like, baby torch. Did you ever find it kind of confusing that there were two different Human Torches?
Yeah.
I did, too. I think every kid goes through that if they see the Invaders. They're like, well, who's that guy? And then eventually they turned him into the Vision, only they did it, you know. Like, in the comics, that was the Vision. They used the Human Torch's android body, and then they've retconned it since then. But, yeah. Yeah, I thought it was confusing, too. I think they just wanted to keep they reused Human Torch and then totally changed him. What a coincidence. There's two guys with the exact same powers called the Human Torch in the Marvel Universe, the comic book universe. Who else was in the Invaders? Was that Union Jack seen there? They had the guy with the British flag on him and Spitfire. Yeah, I remember those comics. Pretty cool. They were kind of like in the DC universe, there's the Justice Society, who are the characters of the 40s. It's neat that Marvel history goes all the way back to then, to the late 30s, early 40s, the Cap and Submariner. I guess Submariner got bought by or acquired by the actual Marvel. So we will see him showing up in the Marvel Cinematic Universe one of these years. Do you know that character pretty well?
No, not really.
He's kind of a dick. Namor's a dick. He just shows up and he's kind of he acts like a king, like he's better than everybody. And, you know, within the Fantastic Four, he's always got this underlying sexual tension with Susan Richards from then. He always, I don't know, you never see that she's attracted to him at all, but he's obsessed with her. But since the Fantastic Four aren't yet in the Marvel Universe, hopefully they will be. I mean, in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, maybe they'll use that to tie it in. Have you seen the Fantastic Four movies? Any of the three?
I watched the recent one from last summer. But I actually forgot I watched it. One of my buddies was like, oh, yeah, like we saw that one. And I couldn't even remember watching it together. So
it's on HBO now. And so I tried to watch it and I got kind of like, there were so many plot holes and things. Like, this is pretty basic. This is like a sci-fi movie, sci-fi network made for TV movie, which is fine. You know, there are some bad movies that are good, but not this one. It's like, there's such wasted potential of the Fantastic Four. Even though not everybody has a comic book connection to them, there's these very historic characters. They're the first characters of the real Marvel Universe, you know, in the early 60s. They were before the Avengers. They were before, not Captain America, but Captain America was frozen at that point, you know. But they've never gotten them quite right on film. The movie's either been too cheesy or just too awful. They actually made a 1990s one with Roger Corman. Have you ever seen that?
No, I haven't. But I've really wanted to like the Fantastic Four movies because there was, around that time of the Roger Corman movie, there was a cartoon on Fox on Sundays, I think. And it was like only two seasons.
Was it a standalone one, or was it part of like the Marvel Universe, or what they called it? They had a superhero show. It had Iron Man on it too.
You know, there was one where Iron Man was a half an hour, and then the Fantastic Four one was a half an hour. And I really liked those cartoons, so I guess wanted to like the movies, but they didn't really do anything for me.
Yeah, and they've had a lot of different cartoons over the years. Even going back to the late '60s, they had a pretty basic one, and then they had a '70s one where they got rid of the Human Torch and replaced him with Herbie the Robot. Have you ever seen that?
Way back in like 95 or something. But that was when I first had a TV in my room. And I would watch Cartoon Network.
That's right.
Before I went to bed. And they would show that a lot. And then there was one video or something. Like, they used to have random videotapes, like at Big Lots or something, with old cartoons. And I had one that it might have had one with the robot, and I think it was a Fantastic Four against Magneto. Okay. And they beat him because Mr. Fantastic, he faked him out with a wooden gun. Magneto was like, oh, no, I can't bend it. I give up. And then he just walked away or something.
That's fantastic.
Like, oh, wooden.
That's awesome. No, that's a good memory. I don't recall that particular one. That's neat that Magneto was actually in the cartoons back then, even before he was big. I remember he was a villain on one of the Spider-Man and the Amazing Friends, because I watched that when it came out in the early 80s when I was a little kid. I liked that show, and that had – they didn't cross over with Fantastic Four, but they did cross over with the X-Men, and Magneto showed up on that show. Spider-Man with Iceman and Firestar, and the kind of the conceit was that Firestar and Iceman were former X-Men, so Spider-Man got to meet the X-Men through them. And that introduced the X-Men to the whole world, basically, or at least to the Saturday morning people. And then they did a X-Men cartoon pilot later in the 80s. Did you ever see that? It's called Pride of the X-Men.
Yeah, and then isn't that what the one arcade video game was kind of based on, too?
Yeah, I think so. And then they had the 92 series that everybody knows is a classic because it went on forever. And it kind of told all these great X-Men stories. So a lot of people got exposed to X-Men through that 92 cartoon. But the arcade game, I think, was based on the earlier version of that. Pretty basic powers, and Wolverine was Australian instead of Canadian, which is kind of funny. Yeah, so he had this Mel Gibson attitude, this Mel Gibson accent going on. Cyclops was still a jerk, though. I'm not a fan of Cyclops. I end up saying that a lot. Every podcast, Cyclops, I never have gotten the affinity for the character. But he's in the new Age of Apocalypse X-Men movie. Have you seen that yet? I haven't.
Oh, yeah, I watched it, and I kind of liked it, but it was kind of really weird. Like, it seemed like there was no, or at least to me, there was no drama, because You know everything that's going to happen because they kind of reset the timeline with everything. So
okay.
I was like, well, you know that they're going to turn into the X-Men in they're going to get back to that first one. And so it seemed like they were introducing everything to set up that one.
So, like, that's this version of the X-Men's introduction of Storm and Angel and Psylocke, I guess, right?
Yeah, and then they have Jean Grey is in there too, yeah.
It seemed like they've got these super young versions of Jean Grey and Cyclops, but, you know, this X-Men continuity is supposed to go back to the 60s, and so Xavier and Mystique, they don't look a day older than they were in the 60s, and yet this is supposed to be 20 years later than that, since the, you know, the Cuban Missile Crisis era, and then you had the Days of Future Past, which was Vietnam era. You know, or at least so it's supposed to be 20 years difference between those films. And it really, you know, they didn't do a whole lot of that. Beast is supposed to be 20 years older. He looks the same.
Yeah, I kind of noticed that. And then even the Quicksilver kid, because he's supposed to be like Magneto's.
Yeah, he's a teenager, supposedly.
Mentioned that a couple times,
too. In the 70s. And then, yeah, well, I think they're just like, okay, it's an X-Men movie. You know what you're getting. We're not going to explain it too much. Or maybe it's a special Earth where mutants age slower than everybody else. Not just Wolverine, but everybody.
Yeah.
So, yeah, cool. All right, so what do we got coming up? We got Doctor Strange coming up, and we have Suicide Squad coming up. We haven't talked a lot about DC. Are you a DC fan at all?
Like, not really as much. Like, I've never really read too many of their comic books because, as I mentioned earlier, my uncle, he seemed to have in his comic book collection that I kind of adopted when I was a kid, he had a lot of Spider-Man comic books, and he had a lot that were Marvel team-ups, and they were Spider-Man, and there was, like, Spider-Man and The Thing. And so, like, I was really more of a Marvel kid, so I've always stuck to that.
I liked Marvel team-ups. They tended to be comics that were done in one issue.
Yeah.
Or if it, you know, it would be a one issue that would tie directly into the next issue, and that was it. I remember I had a Marvel team-up with, it was Spider-Man and Human Torch. Against a guy called the Super Skrull. You ever heard of the Super Skrull?
Yeah, I think that might have even been one that might have been in his collection, too.
Wow, that's cool.
Did that on the Fantastic Four cartoon. They had the Skrull.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had all the powers of the Fantastic Four, but he was one guy, you know.
Yeah. So
I like that. I remember Marvel Team-Up was a pretty good title. It went 150 issues in the 70s up until the early 80s, mid-80s, actually. And, yeah, I had a couple... At one point, I had a collection where I was trying to get every single last one, and then they started putting out these, what do they call them? The Essential Marvel Collections, which are big, thick phone books, meaning they're black and white, and they cover about 25 issues each, and they're cheap as heck. They're 10, 12 bucks, so I started collecting those instead of the actual comic books. It was going to be a lot cheaper and easier to organize. But now there's Marvel Unlimited. Have you checked that out yet?
No, I haven't. I kind of feel like all my answers are like, no.
That's okay.
So sorry.
That's all right. Marvel, I would recommend Marvel Unlimited. Our friend in Milwaukee is a reader of that. And, you know, it gives you access to all these old school titles of Marvel for cheap. So I didn't get paid to say that, but I really like the product. But I read more DC comics contemporarily, the ones that are coming out, but I read more old school Marvel because they're so easy to get into, and they're right there on Marvel Unlimited. Cool. Do you have any comics in your collection at home now?
I still have all the old comic books, like from my childhood. I've got like come in those boxes.
Did you ever get like those bags that would come with two or three comics at Toys R Us?
And that was actually something I scribbled down in some notes I had is that those are most of the comic books I had when I was a kid were grab bags at Toys R Us.
Right on. Yeah, you never knew what you're going to get.
Yeah, because it always seemed like my grandmas, my two different grandmas, like they were the ones that always got me comic books. So I never really had anything like in order. I'd either get the grab bag or I'd get like an X-Men issue here and then another X-Men issue here. So I could never really follow anything, but I just kind of like the pictures, and I kind of like to kind of draw them and, like, scribble, like, my own drawings. Uh-huh. So,
did you ever get the old, you know, they were cards, trading cards based on the comic guys? Those were big back then.
A ton of cards, yeah.
Yeah, I remember a couple different series of those. I had the Marvel ones, and then they did DC ones, and then they did Vertigo ones, and I ended up, you know, my wife found out. I found out that my wife actually, she's about your age. Well, she's actually a little bit older. She's mid, she's 38. Anyway, she had some of those cards growing up. And like, wow, that's pretty interesting that a teenage girl was drawing those things. And I had no idea, you know, that she had this in the background. So I was going through my collection and she found these old pictures of superheroes that she drew. But I think the proportions were kind of funky, but still, it's pretty awesome that, you know, we have this connection even then. Women, yeah, they continue to amaze me. I don't know. So one of these days, man, you'll meet the right girl.
Yeah. And so, she'll like comic books too, maybe.
Maybe she'll even like rock and roll. You need to keep going to these rock shows because there's a lot of cool MILFs that go to those shows, man.
Yeah, I've met a couple.
Nice. Excellent. Excellent. It's just got to be there. It's just going to happen for you. Cool. So right on. Who's the next show? What's the next rock show you're going to?
The next rock show I'm going to is actually in Orlando, Florida, 4th of July, like weekend, kind of after that. It's this band Alter Bridge. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
I've heard of them. Yeah, they do some. They've done some wrestling music, or at least they've had their music used in wrestling, right?
Oh, yeah, the Edge theme song.
On this day, that one?
Yeah. Yeah, it's called Metalingus, but that's what they use for Edge.
Okay, that's cool. Huh. Are they the original? I guess so. Do they still use the You Think You Know Me when they do it live?
Who? The band? Or
yeah. No, when Alter Bridge does it live, do they use the Edge intro? You Think You Know Me.
Oh, no. Like, I guess, like, the song has a different intro, and I think they kind of clipped it for TV just kind of because it has that. It has like the really fast intro or something like that.
I think. So this is a special trip to Orlando to see them, or is it a radio station promotion, or what's the deal?
The thing is they got a new album coming out this year. And one of my friends who actually is older and she's a lady, she's not one of the MILFs or whatever, but I met her at the House of Blues in Chicago at the Alter Bridge show 2 years ago. And I kind of kept in touch with her. She moved down to Orlando, and now they're doing something where it's like Alter Bridge has a new album coming out, and they put out these different packages you could buy. And so we thought we'd buy this thing where you get like a listening party and like a concert with them. So it was like $200, and I got to pay the airfare. But she said I could like room at her house or whatever, so we're going to that. I think it's like right after 4th of July.
Right on. Now, that's pretty great. You got the vacation already blocked off and everything?
Yeah.
That'll be great. Good for you. I don't think we have any Place to Be Nation down there. Nick Duke's a little bit a ways from there, but we're all going to be in Orlando, or at least we're talking like we're going to Orlando for WrestleMania next year, 33.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Orlando for TNA.
Yeah. What is TNA? Actually, TNA is now partially owned by Billy Corgan. That's kind of a trip.
Really?
Yeah, I guess he came through and he invested some money to help them get their Slammiversary to actually air Sunday night. So he's now partial owner or somewhat invested in TNA, which is crazy.
Yeah, I remember 2000, like the dying days of ECW. He was at I didn't go to this event, but they were in Peoria, like I think it was July or August 2000. And he came out and hit somebody with a guitar.
Right on. That's pretty awesome. He actually was a run-in. He did a run-in, Billy Corgan. That's pretty awesome.
I think they showed it on TV, like their TNN show, like a week later. And it might have been like, oh, yeah, I think it was Scotty Riggs when he was in there. It was like, was Riggs and like Dreamer or something. And I think Corgan might have hit Scotty Riggs with the guitar.
I'm going to have to check that out. I wonder if that's still on the network, if that's the case. Because I knew he was a wrestling fan, and I remember I'd heard his name even associated with WCW. And he's from Chicago, too, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, because that's Smashing Pumpkins. That was where their kind of indie scene was out of Chicago.
Yeah. Who's that super producer in Chicago? He did the Nirvana In Utero. I can't recall. He did the Foo Fighters album, too.
Is it Steve Albini?
That's it, yeah. Apparently, he's nuts. I saw a cool Foo Fighters video with him on HBO, Sonic Highways. And
yeah.
He's, like, held up to this super high standard. He's almost like George Martin or somebody, or Bob Rock, you know? This guy that just has his own way of doing things and is very successful.
Huh.
But I think he's mostly in the punk rock slash alternative world. I don't think there's any mainstream stuff you can say. And, you know, it's funny. Do you ever think that you are one of the proponents of hard rock as I know it? You know, there's still radio stations that have rock stations. But for me, I see more the alternative kind of took over in the 90s. And rock never went away. It still kind of went on. And some of it kind of crossed over. Like, you can think of a band like Alice in Chains had a foot in the rock world and in the alternative world. But I love that, you know, you like these bands that just aren't as big as they used to be, but you get these, you know, connections to them. That's really cool. Alice Cooper, man, I'm still blown away about that. I've forgotten all about that dude, and he's one of your favorites, right?
Yeah, so I just cool. really like how his lyrics are tongue-in-cheek, but the music's pretty good. And then he's got really good, like, band members, too.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you're familiar with any of these guys, but there's a guy, Ryan Roxy, who's in his band now. And I guess he's kind of put out a lot of independent, like, music. But I don't know if you want to check out him. Check out Ryan Roxy.
Okay, Ryan Roxy. Right on. I'll check him out. He's, like, he might be what we consider the musical director for the band, you know, like... When you're on tour, there's always a guy that's the band leader, even though if it's a solo artist or something like that, they'll have a guy who's in charge of the band. And I wonder if that's what the case is, because, I mean, Alice has always been a great songwriter, and he's always had really good musicians in his band. I remember my first memory of Alice Cooper was on The Muppet Show, of all things.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He did, it was weird, because he didn't really do his songs. I think he did a Who song, of all things. He did I Can See for Miles by The Who. On the Muppet Show.
Yeah, one of my buddies, or this guy that I knew that I worked at a printing company on third shift, he was kind of one guy that helped me get into Alice Cooper, and he actually let me borrow his Muppet Show, a DVD. He bought it just for that Alice Cooper thing, and it was like he was stealing the souls of the Muppets.
That's right. That actually had a plot line. That's very funny. And it was a big hoot for Alice, because he's always been considered as the kind of guy that was in on the joke, you know? And speaking of, he has a wrestling connection, right? He managed Jake the Snake at WrestleMania 3.
Yeah.
Against the Honky Tonk Man, who you mentioned is back in the day in WCW. I forgot the Honky ever did anything in WCW.
Yeah, I think it's probably one of those things where he was one of Hogan's buddies or something, so they had him. But I don't know, maybe it might have been something really random with the Honky Tonk Man, but I just remember, like, Saturday night or something, turning it on, I'm like, hey, maybe I'll check out this other wrestling. Like, the Honky Tonk Man, next.
Right on. Yeah, if you were a little older, you would have seen AWA. That was the big promotion in your part of the world. But, yeah, WCW was always on Saturday nights, and then WWF, you never knew it would be on. If you didn't have cable, especially, you'd get Superstars or, well, I forget some of the other syndicated shows they had. Wrestling Challenge, I guess, is another one. But
yeah, because it seems like in our area it seemed like Superstars ended up being, like, preempted for college sports. And then I think that Wrestling Challenge, like you mentioned, it was on, like, too late. And I was, like, a kid, so I'd always fall asleep before it was on.
And then when they'd go to commercial, Mean Gene would be talking to all the guys, but the guys would be selling you on their next house show in the area. So, like, they were using – and those syndicated shows, you know, you have Mean Gene or, I don't know, some of the other generic wrestling personalities back in the day, Craig DeGeorge or somebody – interviewing the wrestlers, and they were talking about their next big match at your particular market. You know, even if it was months away, that's how dialed in they had their house shows back in the day. They didn't have TV two nights a week. They had house show, and then tapings. They had these major league 5-hour long tapings for all the syndicated shows, and then they'd knock that out, or then they'd have a quarterly pay-per-view. You know, wrestling's changed so much in our lifetimes. It's so TV-driven now, as far as live TV-driven.
Yeah.
And you remember it was like a big deal to watch Tuesday Night Titans or Primetime Wrestling, and you'd have two guys of name in a main event. It would never have a definitive finish, but it would always have, you know, it would advance somebody's story and have a schmoz of some sort. But, man, wrestling's changed so much. And now we can enjoy all these shows on the network. Pretty cool. So, all right. So I think we're going to wind this down. Are you on Twitter, or do you have anything to plug, or is your show on your radio station available online, Andy?
Well, yeah, I'm on the radio at night, but it's not really a show. I just kind of like, I just read whatever promotional stuff they want me to say, like, hey, we're going to be out at this bar, 7 to whatever. So I pretty much just talk between the songs, but no, like, real show.
Do you ever get to talk up records? You know, have you, like that classic DJ thing where the intro of the song would be going on and you'd get to talk over that and lead into it?
Yeah, but they want you to keep those real short. Like, if you're going to talk between the songs, it's like 15 seconds. But if you want, if you're going to talk before the commercials, like, they're like, okay, you got about a minute and don't go too long.
Do you ever just hang out at the studio live late at night while your show's on and some lonely girl calls you up?
No, I never had girls, but there was this one guy that used to call me all the time, and he's in like a rural town from out of the area, and he'd always call me, and it was funny. He'd always talk about Dio, but it, like, I don't know if the guy was maybe slow or something, because he'd always say the same thing about Dio each time. Like, we lost Dio too soon, man. And I'm like, well, he was like 68 years old when he died. That's still a long time.
Especially for a little dude, you know? Yeah. Sometimes those little people don't last very long. They you know, they have, but anyway, wow, yeah, that's kind of a trip. That guy just was lonely, maybe. Maybe he was lonely, and he wanted to talk to somebody with a fellow interest, or, you know. He didn't request songs at all?
No. Well, yeah, he would kind of. He would always request Holy Diver, though. I'm like, don't you want to hear, like, Last in Line? So
yeah, that's my favorite, actually, is Last in Line.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. We'll know for the first time whether we're evil or divine. We're the last in line.
Yeah.
That's great stuff. That video, that video was, that used to give me nightmares. Like, you're in line to meet the devil, man. Wow. That's dark stuff for 1984.
Yeah. Cool. I like those, it's like Rock and Roll Children, I think.
Yeah, I remember that show too, that song too. Pretty cool. Rainbow in the Dark, is that one?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Is that a solo song or is that him with one of the other bands?
That was solo. I think wasn't that his first album with Holy Diver?
That's it. Pretty cool. I've ended up teaching a lot of these Dio songs to students, and it's like, yeah, you know, it was good stuff. There was what do you think is the worst band you've ever seen live that has a name?
The worst band I've seen live that's a name.
Yeah, the people out there would know.
I don't know. I try to see good bands because I want to get these worth.
But once in a while at a festival or something, you get stuck with a band like Kingdom Come or something. Do you know who Kingdom Come is?
No. The name sounds familiar.
They had a one or two hit songs in the mid-80s, and they were such a, like, unrepentant, blatant Led Zeppelin ripoff. And that was back in the day, like, everybody was still bummed that Zeppelin was gone. Zeppelin, you know, they'd broken up in 1980, and so you still had them on classic rock radio. They were everywhere. Even on hard rock radio, they were around. But this is a band that's all they were doing was trying to copy and nail that Zeppelin sound. And so even their video, you know, it's like, yeah, tribute. So they were turned into a joke pretty quickly because that was like all they could do.
Actually, I'd say maybe Dokken was probably among the worst that I've seen because they were at that bike rally that Tesla was at.
Okay.
Tesla was there. 2014, and I think Dokken was the headliner in 13, and it was really weird. Like, all the bands got headlining set, so they were all playing like an hour and a half.
Ooh.
And it started at 6 o'clock, so by the time Dokken was starting, it was like 10:30, so they were gonna play till like midnight. And after about every two songs, people were just leaving. And probably at the end of Dokken's set, there was me and like 20 people when it was like maybe 200 people.
Was George Lynch in Dokken at that point? Do you know who that is?
Oh, yeah. I know who that is, but no. Yeah, he hasn't been there since.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
80s, I think, but because I saw Lynch Mob like last month.
Okay. Yeah, seeing Dokken without George Lynch wouldn't be prime, wouldn't be ideal. You know?
And then, yeah, he just seemed like he didn't really give a shit because he was wearing a leather jacket and had sunglasses on like in the middle of August, which is weird. And he's just standing there on stage like, well, I wrote this song in 1984. Check it out. And that was it.
For Lynch Mob or for Dokken?
Oh, I'm for Dokken. He just had, like, no, like, enthusiasm.
Wow. So just a paycheck. That's funny.
Yeah.
I remember Dokken had a really good power ballad. And in the 80s, you know, we had these school dances. And so that was the era of the power ballad, like Warrant. And even Motley Crue had a power ballad. But Dokken had a pretty good one called Alone Again.
No, yeah.
I like that song, but that's maybe the short list of Dokken songs I like. How about Winger? You like Winger?
Yeah, I like some Winger, but who doesn't? I mean,
I do too. I'm not ashamed to say I'm somewhat a fan of Winger. Speaking of Winger, he was in Alice Cooper's band back in the day.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
That's who I was thinking of back in the day. He was Kip Winger was the bass player for Alice Cooper back in the 70s. Right on. Yeah, I like Heading for a Heartbreak and 17. Those are all good songs by Winger.
Yeah, I think Winger, though, was the 80s when they did the hard rock comeback with Constrictor and stuff. Mm-hmm. I think that was in the band.
Cool. All right, so let's see. So do you have any classic favorite songs that may be off people's radar that you can recommend them to check out on Spotify?
From just any band?
Any band, yeah. Stuff that you like that you don't think that needs a bigger audience. Maybe something that's like a band that people haven't heard of, or one of your friends' bands that are doing well, or and then maybe like a classic cut that just people may have forgotten about.
Oh man, well, I'll go with Aerosmith because I was talking with some of our other buddies, and even Greg chimed in. I'll go with Aerosmith, Kings and Queens, because that got me into them.
Cool. What era is that?
That was Aerosmith in the late 70s. I think it was the Draw the Line album.
Cool. Yeah, I never heard of Aerosmith until high school, and then Walk This Way dropped. Not Walk This Way, their original track, but Walk This Way with Run DMC, and then... Then they did the Love in an Elevator and their kind of comeback, and they were big for years and years after that. So that's pretty cool that they didn't have any tragedies that killed anybody. They were able to. They almost did, right? They were pretty messed up in the late 70s.
Yeah.
So cool. All right. So Kings and Queens by Aerosmith. I will have to check that out. And then you have some buddies in bands or anything out there?
Oh, yeah. I've got some guys. Oh, well, I don't know if they'll claim like me as a buddy, but they're my buddies. These guys in Nashville, they're called The Great Affairs. And I even got Jope, Joseph.
From 411mania.com.
Yeah, I got him to come out and check them out because they were actually playing in Paducah, Kentucky. And I went down there and I remembered he was in that town. And so he'll back me up. They're a good band. They have their own originals. And if you happen to see them live, they do some really killer AC/DC covers.
The Great Affairs?
Yep.
Okay, Great Affairs. I'm going to check that out. So cool. From Paducah, Kentucky. Awesome. Well, cool.
It's from Nashville, but they were in. They play like all around Kentucky and Tennessee area and stuff.
You ever been down to New Orleans?
No, I haven't.
Apparently that's turning into one of the live music capitals of the... Well, I guess they've always had great live music, but my friend is down there right now, and he's like, you go into every band, every club in town, across the street, there's live music in every club until 4 a.m. everywhere. Uh-huh. I know, that's amazing. I would love to be part of that. I wonder if those guys are into it, or if they bring in, you know, if it's all local guys, or if they just have a nice circuit of touring players that come in. You know, go to Vegas, it's kind of the same thing, too. There's casino bands in every room in Vegas going on. So cool. Well, Andy, it's been a lot of fun. We like every podcast I do, it goes all over the place. But that's just because, you know, we talk about one thing and then a spark lights up, and I want to talk about something else. And you've been a very good sport, and I'd love to talk to you again. We'll probably be on a panel of some sort again. But thank you for doing this, and I hope you enjoyed it. That was a loaded question.
Oh, yeah. I had a good time, and I kind of like this more kind of off-topic stuff. That's kind of like my forte, I guess.
Yeah, and apparently it's mine, too, because every podcast I do, that's where I end up, which is okay. I like talking and finding out stuff about people and finding the things that we have in common, and then, you know, you know something about a particular topic that the other person doesn't know, and that leads to something else, and then somebody will be listening to this, and they'll hit us up on Twitter or something like that and say, hey, did you know that Kip Winger was in this band or something? So cool. So enjoyed especially the rock and roll talk, because that may be something, you know, maybe you can do a Place to Be Nation, not just a column, but you could do maybe a podcast. Maybe that would be a conflict of interest, though, for you to do your radio station. But you know a lot about rock and roll specifically, and so I enjoyed talking that aspect with you. And I don't have a lot of people in my life that have the same music background. You know, I tend to have a little bit of a foot in alternative, in rock, and even pop. I have to teach flipping Justin Bieber songs to people and Ed Sheeran. So it's nice to talk music that has some cojones, you know?
Yeah. Even Greg, he's a fan of Alter Bridge, too.
Okay. I know he's kind of an expert on classic rock, too. He definitely, you know, he's always talking about Zeppelin or The Who to me, which is cool. That guy's awesome. You know, it's cool when you have people that, like, just not just one of your common interests, but wrestling and comics or wrestling and music. So, cool. Well, it's late, and listeners out there, thank you for listening and checking this out. Once again, make sure you subscribe to our feed via iTunes or the Stitcher app. This is PTBN Pop. This show is called Todd Weber's Conversation Comics. And Andy, Helene, anything else to say to the fine people out there?
Actually, I know we're trying to wrap it up, but I ask you a couple questions.
I would be, yeah, go ahead. Absolutely. Go for it, man. We can stretch this out. I have no problem with that. And sure, absolutely. Go for it.
Oh, you, you're older, and so you go back further into wrestling, but who's your favorite wrestler?
My favorite wrestler of all time is, I would probably say, Dean Malenko of all. Because when I got into Malenko, I've never seen a bad Dean Malenko match. Even some of the kind of funky WWF matches, WWE matches after the his split with WCW, you know, he got into some weird feuds and things like that. But I've always enjoyed his work. Once I saw him in ECW and then WCW, he became kind of my favorite. I also like Chris Jericho, but I think a lot of the later Chris Jericho work has soured his legacy just a little bit. You know, he comes back and it's always the same old thing. He puts the guys over, and some of the matches are good and some of the matches are just not great. So I used to be maybe Chris Jericho, but Dean Malenko, I think, endures for me. So I would say he's on my list. My top five would probably be Malenko, Jericho, Guerrero, used to be Benoit, but now I can't, and Kurt Angle and Shawn Michaels. Those are my top five.
You kind of hit on like the WCW cruiserweight guys that I kind of got into.
Yeah, I mean, the NWO was the hook to get into WCW, but the cruiserweights and the workers were like the meat, and they were the things that, like, oh, there's really an art to telling a story in the ring. You know, I mean, even though Savage Steamboat we'd all seen, that was probably the first great match anybody has ever seen for me. Like, of my age, that was the first match they saw on a pay-per-view that was like, yeah, this is awesome. And then Steamboat Flair, those feuds were obviously awesome work rate matches. But on TV, free TV, I think those four guys that I mentioned earlier, and then, you know, Shawn Michaels, what can you say? You know, and Angle too. I think Angle may be one of those guys, like Jericho, his later work has soured his legacy just a little bit, but also his drug use too. So, cool, good question. I guess I don't talk about my favorite wrestlers all that often, but Malenko is probably mine. He's the guy that I identified with the most and enjoyed his work the most. And I went back and found a lot of his Japanese work on some comp tapes. I need to get those transferred to DVD. But, yeah, even his Japanese stuff is awesome.
Yeah, because it was cool that you mentioned Malenko, because that was because I think it was, yeah. I was getting into WCW then with NWO, but I liked how the Ultimo Dragon showed up with, like, 8 or 9 belts.
Right, that was a cool gimmick, huh?
And then he was wrestling Malenko, and I remember this. It was my birthday, actually. I was at basketball practice, and I was like, I was telling my mom to hurry home because I wanted to watch Clash of Champions because they're supposed to have Malenko and Ultimo.
So it's probably a Thursday night.
Yeah, or something. It was like a weeknight, but I remember wanting to race home and telling my mom to hurry. I was like a snotty little kid, like, hurry home, so we can watch Clash of Champions.
Right on. So you like the cruiserweights even then. I remember, yeah, the Malenko Mysterio series back then, just like they were on a whole bunch of pay-per-views, and they were on Raw or Nitro almost every week for a while. Those were fantastic. If you go to, what's that, DVDVR, have you ever seen that website? That was one of their running gimmicks. Death Valley Driver Video Review was a kind of an influential website for wrestling back in the day. It still is out there, but they would make these cool comps, and so you'd have a Dean Malenko comp where he was wrestling all over the world, but it would have a lot of those Mysterio Malenko matches. I remember there was one perfect tag team match. It was like my favorite four wrestlers in the same match, and it was heel Eddie Guerrero, heel Chris Jericho versus Benoit and Malenko faces. And it might have been on Thunder, but it was like a, you know how you played the N64 games like No Mercy and World Tour and all those games. It was like one of those games come to life where you'd put your favorite wrestlers into a match. I still remember that match. Another Ultimate Dragon memory. I went to a Nitro in February of 98, and I had a little bit of money, and I was single at that time, so I bought second row seats. And that was when it was really hot, right? So I paid way too much money, I think $200 each for these second row seats, and I brought my brother in. We didn't know we were right in the line of the camera. So all night, we're right there. So the hard camera is facing us, and you see me just acting like a jackass with Ultimo Dragon's match. You know, I'm doing stupid Japanese bowing and shit to him. So dumb. You know, what the hell? What is that? But my favorite memory from that Nitro was Eddie was working as a heel. It was during his, I think, his first main heel run, pre-LWO.
Oh, yeah. When he had, like, Chavo with him?
Yeah, he was training Chavo to be a bad guy. You know, look at me, Eddie, I'm cheating to win. And Eddie, there's a spot. He did a suplex, and he was on the back half of a suplex or something, and he was going to get pinned. But I noticed he was by the ropes, and I've been watching his matches pretty carefully. So I told everybody, Eddie's going to put his foot on the rope. And I said, all right, y'all, put your foot on the rope, Eddie. And he did it. And I don't know if he made eye contact with me, but I know he heard me. So I know I didn't call that spot. That was what he was planning to do, but I still remember that. Like, I looked like a genius to those people. You know, this is all these marks in 1998. Classic. Wow. But that was wrestling was the hottest thing in the world back then. Like, it was fever pitch. That was the night after Steiner Brothers broke up.
Oh, so right after Super Brawl.
Yeah, which I went to also.
Yeah, those were at the Cow Palace,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I went to like three Super Bowls in a row, actually about five in a row. And usually I'd go to Nitro the night after. Not always, but the first three, I think, I went to Nitro afterwards and saw the great Benoit Sullivan matches, and Benoit DDP at one of those was really good. But the one I remember the most was the Steiner Brothers breaking up, because it popped. That was the loudest pop all night. Was not even when Sting beat Hogan fairly cleanly for the title in their rematch. When Steiners broke up, it was like the whole crowd popped for Big Papa Pump joining the NWO.
Dang.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I had one other question for you, because this is kind of a comics thing. Going to say, who's your favorite comic book character?
Well, I mean, Batman's the easy answer for a lot of people. I look at my collection, I have so many Batman and Superman comics. So I think right now my favorite character is Aquaman. And I just did a podcast on Aquaman, which is pretty cool. But he's been my favorite for a couple years now. In high school, I think Superman was my favorite. And I just identified with him. You know, he was the incorruptible, the good guy that did the right thing no matter what, the Boy Scout. He was still the mama's boy, too. If you watch the movies, you know, I kind of related to Superman a lot. And he was just like the ideal, not because he was more powerful than everybody else, but he was better than everybody else as a person. He's just the right person. He inspired you, you know? And then as things got, I don't know, maybe pop culture became more prevalent in the 80s and 90s, and you had entertainment magazines, and you had a lot of swag coming out. So I was going to the Warner Brothers studio store and buying all their Superman merchandise, buying busts and belt buckles and phone cases and all kinds of stuff. I had Superman everything for a while. Every action figure that came out, every T-shirt that came out, underwear, everything. And then I started seeing douchebags with Superman stickers on their cars or the Superman emblems on their back, on their tractor pull, that kind of thing. And I thought, you know what? Superman's just too exposed. Everybody likes him. And I forgot why I liked him, I guess. I just kind of stopped. Like, well, everybody likes Superman, and I don't want to be just lumped in with everybody. So I thought about my youth, and I had some Aquaman toys when I was a kid, but I also got picked to be Aquaman when we'd pick teams or we'd do, I don't know, role-playing as kids. You know, you're adventuring in your backyard. This is way before video games, kids, and or trampoline wrestling, that kind of thing. And I was always super Aquaman because I had blonde hair. And I also remember I had Aquaman underoos. You remember underoos?
Yeah.
I had Aquaman underoos, so I think he's my favorite now, just because he's He's kind of limited in his powers, but he's always creative, and you know, he's in on the joke at this point with the comics. He's actually he's kind of, I use this analogy, he's postmodern. You know, he knows exactly who he is, and that's okay. He knows that, you know, you've heard these jokes, but he owns them now. He's still super serious. He's still a sincere and earnest guy, kind of like Superman, but he's unique. We were talking about it on the last pod that he's got one foot in the Atlantis world and one foot here on Earth, and or on the surface anyway. And so, you know, his stories are always going back and forth, but he's never truly part of either one of those. And that's kind of like Superman too, right? He's an alien, but he was raised here, and he's never going to feel totally comfortable either, you know, if he fully embraces his Kryptonian heritage, or he's more comfortable being Clark Kent. I mean, Superman is always Clark Kent, and the mask he puts on is Superman. You know, he's that's kind of like his ideal, but Clark Kent is the real guy, right? And yeah. Batman's the real guy, and Bruce Wayne is the mask he puts on. Aquaman doesn't have any masks. He's the same guy, you know, whether he doesn't have a secret identity either. He's just he is who he is. And so he's always that character. I also like that he's one of the few comics characters who has had successful relationships. Like, he has a long-term relationship. And so that speaks well to the guys who've been married for a long time, like me. So yeah, Aquaman is my current favorite. When I was in high school, Wolverine was my favorite, other besides Superman. I mean, Superman I aspired to be, but I also had like this, I don't know, resentment of this guy who reminded me of Cyclops. You know, he was the confident leader. His name was Devin, and he was, he wasn't necessarily a jerk. He was just the things I hated, and I always saw myself more as the Wolverine, you know, the guy that didn't get the credit. And Wolverine's changed a lot in the comics. Don't get me wrong. Wolverine's kind of like he's in every single comic. They changed him a lot from the 80s to the 90s, because back then he was kind of an underground character. He was what was cool about him, you know, he was hyper-violent, but he always had a chip on his shoulder, and that's how I related to him. So, yeah, it's changed a couple times, Wolverine, Superman, and now Aquaman. But those I'd say were my top favorites.
Well, you were saying you got all the Superman merchandise. Is there any Aquaman merchandise?
I have a couple Aquaman action figures, and this guy who... I collect Mego action figures, which are old school 70s ones that are posable, kind of like, you know how you have the little G.I. Joe figures that are posable? Every yeah. joint is posable. Well, that's how the Megos were back in the day. They had cloth, they're 8 inches, and they had cloth costumes, and they're mostly accurate to like the Super Friends costumes for the most part. So, but I have, anyway, this magnet that was made for me by a guy who wrote a book about Megos, and because I'm an Aquaman fan. I'm not well-known online, but I'm always chipping in with Aquaman stuff on Twitter. And so he sent me this cool hand-painted magnet of Aquaman. It's really neat. So maybe that one, just because it was made for me specifically. But I have a lot of cool stuff. I have a big, giant Alex Ross painting that's a print. It's not a painting, but it's a big picture of Superman from one of his comics that Alex Ross did. And Alex Ross is a painter. He did... series called Earth X for Marvel, and he's done a whole bunch of stuff. Specifically, Kingdom Come was his big one for DC. Yeah, I mean, I have more stuff than I should. I used to have a room dedicated to comic swag and figures and statues and stuff, but when I had kids, that was gone. Everything's in boxes in the garage now.
I don't know if I have any other questions for you. But
okay. Do you have any comic swag too? Or
well, I just have a couple posters I think are pretty cool. I actually got a Captain America First Avenger from that movie poster, because there was a girl I knew, and she was working at a movie theater in town, and she just wanted a ride to work or something, or home, and I was like, yeah, sure, I'll give you a ride, whatever. Well, I guess to return the favor, she got me a poster from the theater, so I thought that was cool.
That's very cool. So is it like what's on the DVD cover?
No, it's like him, and you can see the side of his face and part of the shield, I think, and it's actually like the authentic one, because it's like the double-sided.
That's cool. Oh, okay, double-sided movie poster. Very cool. Did you frame it?
I got it framed, and then I have another poster I bought from a Man of Steel movie. But this is like, I think it was something called Mondo, one of these companies.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they do merchandise, you know, collectibles.
I've noticed they do like limited runs. Like It says if you want to buy this, look for our sale on Twitter or the link. But like, I got the Man of Steel poster that they did, and it looks like a 70s poster because it's like drawn and it's like painted, and it looks awesome. And it looks better than any movie poster I've seen recently.
Right on. Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah, and you are a movie guy, so that ties in. Very cool. Do you see yourself moving into, or do you have a big VHS collection or DVD collection, or are you going to be going digital with your stuff?
Oh, I have. Like, that was how I got talking to some of our buddies online more outside of that Scott Keith blog, is because around 06, I bought a DVD recorder, and I was transferring all these Raws and stuff, pay-per-views I had on VHS, and then Andrew, who's who does like the NBA, I think, well, he was he, I guess, lost his house and lost a lot of stuff in Hurricane Katrina, and he was out of like all these videos. So I actually recorded some stuff and sent it to him, and then even that guy Kurt, who's up in Milwaukee, I ended up trading WWF stuff to him, and I got WCW stuff in return. So that's how I saw all this early '90s WCW stuff.
That's so cool. And, you know, and who'd have known that years later we'd have it all, you know, at a click. But even back then, I remember building up my collection. I kept it organized chronologically. My big thing was pay-per-views. I didn't do TV or Raws unless it was something connected to a pay-per-view, like the Raw the next night or if something was going on. But, boy, I was obsessive about it for years. You know, I'd even buy the actual releases, the actual DVDs of the shows, you know, like a – I had every DVD from 2001, I don't know, to 2009, I think. And then I started giving up a little bit, just like, how do I keep up with this? They're putting out 13 a year. I think I'd rather just get the comps. And who knows, maybe this network thing that we've been talking about for years may actually happen. Who knows what will happen with that? So I stopped buying the DVDs, but I still have them all. I gave away all my VHS, you know, from like the Coliseum videos. I didn't think there'd be any market for those. I tried to sell some online too, but it's really, I think I held on to the VHS too long. DVDs, I think you could still get something for them. And these are actually store-bought ones. My dubbed ones that I had, I just threw out. There's no need to have those anymore.
Yeah. But I still have a bunch that I haven't actually dubbed because I bought like a DVD recorder, like I said, and I was making so many DVDs for myself and then for the other guys to trade that I burnt through it, and I think it broke. And I bought another one, and then that one broke, and I was just like, I already bought like two or three, whatever. I'll just stick with what I got.
Yeah. I mean, VHS used to take up so much room. And then you could DVD, you just put them all in a binder or something. It's nice. Nice storage thing. But now it just takes up somewhere on a cloud, right? These digital things you get, these digital... like the network takes up no space.
Oh, yeah. I was even so picky with my VHS tapes. I'd actually like make little labels and had like not like a label maker, but there was some program on the computer where I like got the logos and stuck them on there and then typed out the matches, and you could print it out for the top of the VHS and then the spine. So I was kind of picky about it.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I used to, with the burnt DVDs I would get, because I'd order them on friend, you know, I never bought them off eBay or anything because those guys would get busted, but through the blog and through other places, through Scott's blog, after he kept it going, I'd get these DVDs, and then I want them to blend in with my other ones, so I'd track down the actual DVD box art, you know, and print that up, or take it into Kinko's and print that up, you know, high quality one, and then size it so it would fit the actual clamshell box or whatever, the DVD box and the mini ones. Boy, put so much effort into those things. It's funny. It's like, it's nice to have, but I don't know. I'm trying to wonder if I'll ever have the time to really do a rewatch. Hopefully I will down the road. You know, I'll be able to go through and just watch everything chronologically like they are doing on the website sometimes. You know, they're going through everything and just like, well, now I don't think I have time for that, although it's nice to be able to if you have the time.
Yeah, usually I just have enough time to watch like a random thing. Like I was watching WCW recently and like getting back into the cruiserweight stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when Nitro went to 2 hours and then went to 3 hours, we got a lot more of those matches. And then when they brought in the luchadors too, you know.
Yeah.
A lot more content and stretched out the shows, which was cool. But boy, there were nights, you know, you'd have the 3-hour Nitro and the 2-hour Raw. Do you remember those days where you're trying to watch them both? And there was no overlap. Sometimes they would rerun one or two of the shows. And so that's when I would tape one and watch the other. And then they had DVRs, thank goodness. But by that time, the Monday Night Wars were pretty much over.
Yeah, I think they used to do that where it was Nitro was on earlier for 2 hours. Raw was on, and that overlapped with the second hour. And then I'd end up trying to stay up to watch the Nitro replay. Right. Usually I'd fall asleep because I had school.
Yeah. Yeah. Those were the days, though. That was like the highlight of my week was that Monday night.
Yeah.
watching both shows back to back, wondering if, you know, what was delayed, what was going to be the shot fired across the bow and see.
And then guys turn inside just by their T-shirt. They take off another T-shirt, yep. Have something else underneath.
Classic time. So cool. Did you? So you sounded like you. What got you back into WWF?
I guess I was always into WWF from like I said 92, 93, and I was into that straight till about 05.
Okay. Okay. Like, you never left then. Okay. Me, I left and then I came back after WCW came back and then, well. I don't know what the hook was. I guess it was McMahon Austin, but I was watching. I guess I started relating to guys like Foley and The Rock and watching those things develop. But I think I started noticing the differences in the shows. And, you know, Nitro had a lot of excess and filler and random stuff. It seemed to be a lot like what Raw is now these days. But back then, Raw never had a wasted second. You know, it was so well booked that everything had a purpose on that show. I just started noticing the difference. I like the production values better of Raw, too. And then WCW just got so shitty towards the end. It was a pretty easy choice, especially when all our favorites, you know, left to join WWF in 2000 or so. From Jericho and then Malenko, Guerrero, Benoit, and Saturn kind of riding those coattails. Cool.
And with your Superman and Aquaman, you are more of a DC guy than Marvel or both?
You would say I am. I would say I am more of a DC guy, although, you know, I've read lots of both. And some of the comics I read growing up, I think I had a little bit of both going on. The earliest comic memories I have, I think an old Master of Kung Fu issue that my mom brought back for me when I was maybe 4 or 5. And then I got this Superman versus Wonder Woman, giant oversized comic in the mid-70s. That I still remembered pretty well. It was kind of iconic. Stuck with me. So I guess I related more. There was more DC TV for me as a young kid because of Super Friends. So that was where I guess I got into mostly. But I don't know. I mean, it has waxed and waned. I used to be big into X-Men, and then I got back into Teen Titans on the other side, DC, and then get into the Avengers, and I get into the Justice League, you know? But I've always collected both, but DC is more where I came from. I think Marvel's a better run company. I will say that, you know, and some of the characters in Marvel are better, but it's, you know, it's all personal preference too. I guess I'm more of a DC guy. Just most of the stuff I've liked and gravitated towards, and especially the stuff I've spent money on in my adult life, you know, as far as swag or trade paperbacks collections has been DC. Although I have a fair amount of Marvel. I will say I read more Marvel these days because of the Marvel Universe app that we were talking about. The Netflix for Marvel. You can go and read any comic on their library, but you have to read it digitally. But still, if you have a good iPad or even a decent computer, you know, there's a lot of people who hack and pirate comics, and it's just stupid to do that when you can get access to Marvel comics for unlimited for only a couple bucks a month. It works out to be like 11 bucks a month for me, which is nuts. Even less than that, actually. So I talk about Marvel Unlimited a lot.
I do that. I have a subscription thing. I do the iTunes Apple Music, so I get that on my phone.
Very cool. Did you try Spotify first?
No, actually I didn't, because I have so many like CDs and then even listening to stuff at the radio station and like borrowing people's CDs, I just save it all on like a external hard drive. But then Everybody's talking about Spotify or like Pandora, and I'm like, I already have all this music.
Yeah.
Search this. But then the iTunes thing, it was just on my phone, and I thought I'd try it. And there was a 3-month trial, and it kind of seems like both, because you can get you can search through anything that's on iTunes. You can get any album, but then also they end up giving you different like playlists. I think it's like tailored to what I listen to on the home screen. It'll show me different albums. It'll be recommended like, oh, here, you listen to Dio, so maybe you'll like this one. And then there's different like playlists and things. So it's kind of like both, I guess, both services.
That's pretty awesome. Do you ever think, I mean, you've got it all burnt to your hard drive, and I do too. I have some like 35,000 songs, but ever since I started streaming music, I buy a lot less, And I wonder, you know, like, did I waste all my money? I still have hard copy. You know, I have the actual CDs on there on the shelf, and why do I need these anymore? I either listen to it on my hard drive or on the streaming service. And I guess what do you do with those CDs? You donate them. You can't really sell them anymore. You can't trade them into used record shops for what, 50 cents each, maybe.
There's record store that I still go to in our area, and I'll still buy some stuff. And then if I want to get something new, I'll be like, well, I can probably part with these couple CDs, so I'll get a couple bucks knocked off the new album.
Okay.
Whatever.
Are you the kind of guy that appreciates vinyl?
I have some vinyl, but I don't really actually get enough time to actually sit down and listen to it, because I'll usually listen to music like when I'm at work,
mm-hmm.
Or in the car. So that's when CDs comes in, because the Apple Music, the iTunes, I only have it so I listen to it when I'm on Wi-Fi, so it doesn't suck up my data. And then in the car, I'll throw on a CD.
That's pretty awesome. I don't know. I just don't know that I'm going to access these CDs ever again. I got them all. I'm trying to think the last time I actually bought a CD. It may have been just something I was trying to find that I couldn't find on a streaming service, like an old, you know, Mr. Alternative. A band called Material Issue. I wanted to find their original one. I found it for cheap, so that was pretty cool. But vinyl, I think it's a time investment, and I just don't have the time either. You know, you're as busy as I am with your two jobs and stuff going on. I just don't have time to do the aesthetic music thing, you know, where you take it out of the case and smell the actual record and read the liner notes. I just don't have the time to do that. I don't know if there's an audio difference. If, you know, people talk about vinyl being warm. I mean, in classic rock radio pre-1985, everything was LPs. Everything was that. And I guess it sounded okay, but CD is just programmable and it's easy. And did you watch the Tower Records documentary that came out?
No, I didn't. I haven't watched that vinyl show either.
I think that vinyl show is less about the actual discs and more about just like the early 70s rock scene and club stuff and cocaine. I think it is. I've heard good stuff about it, but I think it's connected to the Rolling Stones somehow. I need to check it out. I guess I'll get around to it. That's one of those that I still haven't finished season 2 of Daredevil. That's on my radar. I need to catch up.
Oh yeah. Thanks for reminding me.
Yeah. I mean, we put it off cause it's bingeable, right? There's no real hurry to do it. You know, it's going to be good. There's not like big surprises that are going to be spoiled, but I put it off because I can watch it whenever. And there are shows on my DVR that, no, I can't because I'm going to need that room. So that's the thing with these bingeable shows. I don't necessarily watch them in a timely manner. I just put it off until when it's convenient, which is good. I guess that's the idea. You know, you can watch it at your convenience. Vinyl itself, the records, people talk about it being, I don't know, better sounding, warmer sounding, but CDs are where it's at. But the Tower documentary was talking about how CDs just became so piratable and copyable that it ultimately killed the industry. And then when they started sending them online, you know, you could do Napster downloads or Pirate Bay or whatever, you know, then the bottom really dropped out and there was no need for retail music stores anymore.
I think the thing with CDs that I kind of liked is, like, they haven't done this in a while, I don't think. But, like, I think about 2003 when they were really coming out with, like, downloads and Napster and LimeWire and stuff. There's a couple CDs I bought. They came with, like, a free, like, DVD. So you got extra stuff. So it kind of seemed like something to buy.
Yeah. I got a Surfing with the Alien reissue by Joe Satriani, and it came with a DVD of a concert, old concert by him. So, yeah, I remember that. I like box sets, too, collectible box sets of CDs. And then, you know, sometimes they'll have the DVD or they'll have something rare that you can't find, like a live disc of some sort, you know. Yeah, that's true. They would come out with bonuses. Cool. Are you a Beatles fan at all?
I'm not really a huge Beatle fan, but actually I've gotten more into them over the years because, like, artists have covered their songs. Mm-hmm. Listen to the original.
Cool. But, what's your favorite cover of a Beatles song?
Oh, man. It would have been Something Else. It would have been, like, back in, like, 2001, I would have said Eleanor Rigby by this band Godhead. But now I've kind of gotten out of that kind of, like, 03 style of, like, new metal, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'd say it's probably is my buddy's band, The Great Affairs. They did, like, We Can Work It Out, and they did it live. And
that'd be cool. Huh. Is it kind of, well, We Can Work It Out is almost soulful. It's kind of this kind of shuffled feel to it. How do they do it? Do they change the style up at all?
They did it the same way, but I guess that's not really a Beatles song that I ever really, like, would hear on the radio or something. So it kind of one I'd overlook because you'd always know there's always, you know, the ones that they play on classic rock is, like, Revolution.
Right. Yeah. Helter Skelter sometimes, but.
USSR.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Stuff that fits a little more hard rock and classic rock stuff. While My Guitar Gently Weeps, you hear that a lot. But yeah, We Can Work It Out. It'd be cool to see a band pull that off live. And I think that's the appeal of a lot of Beatles covers is the Beatles weren't around to do a lot of their later stuff live. You know, there's a famous recording of them doing Hey Jude live and a couple of the things. But All You Need Is Love live. But most of the stuff they did on their records from Rubber Soul on, there's nothing, no live performances out there. And so when you hear a band cover it and cover it well or put their own spin on it and it's good, it doesn't suck. It's pretty cool. And we're covering a Beatles song right now, and it's just like, wow, there's these layers of depth there that is a lot more to it. We're doing something off Sgt. Pepper. It's called Getting Better. I have to admit, it's getting better.
Oh, I've heard that because it was on commercials.
It's in commercials, absolutely. That one's used a lot. And so we're playing this Paul McCartney birthday show on Friday. So it's songs, everything that we're doing has to be a song by Paul McCartney. So we're doing one Wings song, one later Paul song, and then we're doing Getting Better. But all the bands have to do Paul McCartney songs. So not just Beatles songs, it has to be a Beatles song that Paul McCartney sings. And so a show like that's really cool because you only have to learn a couple songs to do it. And
yeah
it'll be fun.
What Wings song or Paul McCartney song?
Jet is the Wings song. Do you know Jet?
Yeah.
I'm doing Jet. It's kind of poppy. We're rocking it out a little bit more because we're two guitar band. We still have a vintage synthesizer that we're going to use for the synth parts, but I'm singing it and it's really high to sing. So my voice has been a little thrashed with these practices, but we're up in the tempo just a little bit and pushing it. And so yeah, we're doing Jet. And then the Paul McCartney solo song is from his 1988-89 album, that era, his song called My Brave Face from the album Flowers in the Dirt. And I picked that because it's co-written by Elvis Costello, who's one of my favorites. In fact, if I was going to do a tribute band, I'd probably be an Elvis Costello tribute band. I'd like to do that just because I've always found his music really interesting and underrated, and like it endures. You know, it's like for alternative, or it's not even that. It's more new wave, right? It's really underrated. People don't give it the credit it deserves, and there's some really, really cool Elvis Costello songs. But it's like prototypical alternative rock. So it's not classic rock necessarily. It's more. New wave and 70s alternative college rock, right?
I'm not too familiar with all the stuff, but I know like Allison, I think.
Right on. Yeah, Allison's a great song. And so that's what's kind of interesting about Allison and some of the songs on the first album is he was picked by the record company to come out here and record his first album here. And it wasn't with his regular band. It was with a whole bunch of studio musicians here. So it has a little more unique, like Allison has a lot of lead guitar on it, but Elvis is always singing. He's the only guitar player in his band, so he's not doing a lot of lead. But if you listen to that first album, you look up the names, those are all the guys that ended up being in Huey Lewis and the News, which is cool. Huey himself is not in it, but the rest of the band, which is a 70s band called Slade, S-L-A-D-E, they ended up being Huey Lewis, which is cool.
The same Slade that was like, come on, feel the noise.
Is that Slade? Maybe I have it. Maybe I have the name wrong. Because, yeah, you're right. That's a different band. I have to look it up. Ah, stupid Wikipedia. I'll find out. It's not Slade. That's the wrong name. It's like Domino or something like that.
Losing your movie rock.
I know. My cred's slipping. I'm getting old and I'm, you know, the Alzheimer's is setting in early. Here we go. I will in the notes for the show, perhaps, or maybe when I put a Twitter release, I'll release that information. There we go. I'll put an edit. We need a stat boy for the show. I'll talk to Brad and see if I have a budget to get a stat boy to keep me on my toes, because I'm making mistakes almost all the time. I don't know.
You can have an intern. Yeah.
There we go. Oh, very good. Oh, I hope she's cute. Oh,
cool. Or have like Tajiri, like when he was a houseboy.
Oh, man. Wow.
Eagle.
That was when my wife was watching wrestling with me. She loved Tajiri. She thought he was funny. Regal is in NXT now. He's running the show. At least he's their onstage commissioner. I think he'll have a job with WWE for life at this point.
Yeah, I really like Regal. He's always been kind of fun throughout the eras.
I need to go back and find the Regal Goldberg legendary match where Regal fucks him up a little bit.
The Hill Man's Man.
There's some great Regal moments back then. And then he went right back. He came over to WWF for a minute and then went right back to WCW. Had good matches with Booker T, had good matches with Finlay. But yeah, I think Regal ended up being tight with Triple H, so he's going to end up having a job with that company forever at this point, which is good. I liked him. I've always liked Regal. Cool. Well, I think they were winding down. I need to have dinner. I haven't had dinner yet.
Oh, sorry, man.
It's okay. Yeah. No, it's really okay. I'd rather do this, but I need to eat something. I think it's just I think there's some frozen pizza left over. So, cool. So we will wrap up this episode. And if you want to check me out on Twitter, I'm at Todd Weber Guitar. And then Andy's given us some musical selections to check out. And I would love to continue this conversation in some other format one of these days, or even this format. We'll just have something specific to talk about, and then we'll end up going all over the map and talk more rock and roll, because we could probably do that all night. It's not Slade. Who is it? Darn it, I'm going to figure it out one of these days. It's going to bug me until I find out. I'm sure it's just something I can research really quick on the internet. So cool.
As soon as you turn off the mic, it'll come to you. That's usually what happens to me.
That's how it works for me too. Or in the middle of the night, like, oh, that's who it was. All right. Well, for Andrew Helene, Andy Helene, a bad guy, the Ayatollah of rock and roll, DJ Andy Savage, my name is Todd Weber, and you've been listening to Conversation Comics here on Place to Be Pop. I'm going to get it right one of these days. So we'll see you next time. Have a good night. Or day. I've been defeated and brought down.